I spun around and felt fear grip my stomach. He knew about my daughter. He knew her name. If he told his kin, they would hunt her down.
We should try this again.
I heard a shout far above me. I looked up and fought against my amazement. Thousands of islands floated through the air, stretching infinitely into a blue sea of sky. Plump white clouds danced between the blots of brown islands. Some had water pouring from them, and the spray disintegrated into the blue sky with a rainbow spread of misty color. It was exactly like the dreamscape I had once painted. "What is this place?" I yelled my question to the man. He dangled from the side of a small island 200 yards above me, his gray hair falling from the edge like the waterfalls.
"It is the place between death and life. It is the place of dreams and birth."
He smiled, and then stuck his tongue out in an incongruously childish move that reminded me of Vyarathi.
"Can I come down now and talk?
How do you know about my daughter?" I could not reach the man. Just as I spoke, a flock of large white birds flew between us, and I wished I possessed their wings.
"I know many things about all sorts of people."
His head moved back behind the ledge of the island, and he disappeared from my view.
"But Vyarathi is important."
His voice was behind me, and I spun to face the man. "How did you do that?"
"We can do anything here."
He bobbed his head.
"Will you answer my earlier question? Why didn't you tell Kair his daughter's name?"
I didn't want her to hear me. I crossed my arms and sighed.
"Ah, I see."
He frowned and nodded once.
"It was a wise decision, after all."
"Who are you?" Another group of birds flew by and let out a chorus of squawks.
"Who do you think I am?"
He smiled again, and his tongue lolled out like a dog. "Someone who is fucking annoying, but I cannot seem to kill." It was worth a try. He laughed from his small round belly and fell on the ground. Then he rolled around like a dog and twisted with howls. I took a step toward him and contemplated attacking again while he was distracted, but then I stopped myself. The man seemed overjoyed by my comments, and tears were actually streaming down his round cheeks.
"You always made me laugh."
He got up after a few moments and let out a long sigh. Then he giggled a few more times before he finally gained control over his amusement.
"As of late, I've been called Entas. Sometimes I am taller and am called Wark."
He stepped toward me and held out his old, thin hand. I looked at it but kept my arms crossed over my chest. The second name sounded familiar, but I could not place it in my memory. "Are you an O'Barney?" I asked.
"No, and yes. It is an old name. I did not like the humans that first used it, but Kair and his friends were pleasant."
"They killed my entire race," I growled.
"You would not have liked the earlier O'Barney either."
He winked at me and smiled. "How do you know of my daughter? Why did you say that she was important?"
"I think of her as a kindred soul. Would you believe me if I told you that I wanted to ensure that she lives and meets her father?"
"Why would I believe this?" The wind changed and my stomach dropped. The strange human had a unique scent about him. He smelled of oil and smoke. It wasn't as strong as Kair's scent, but it reminded me enough of my lover to surprise me. It also reminded me of Vyarathi. "Who are you?" I growled at the man again. "Where am I? Am I dead?"
"Do you remember dying?"
He raised a gray eyebrow. "Yes," I said, and the finality of the words made my arms drop from my chest with exhaustion. I felt the flames burn me. I tried to use the world to heal, but I could not escape their desire. The pain was too great. I had screamed for Kair.
"Then maybe you are dead."
He shrugged his shoulders, and the movement oddly did remind me of Kair. "Are you dead?" I asked the strange man.
"I've died many times."
He laughed again.
"I hope this is the last time, but I haven't given up on living yet."
"You are strange.
I don't understand half of what you say. I don't mean to confuse you. He bobbed his head again. You said this was the place between death and life? I asked. Or your dream? Antus raised an eyebrow. But I am dead. This is the afterlife? Am I not supposed to join the dead gods in their slumber? That is a silly notion. He leaned on his cane and appeared to think about what I had just asked. He did not speak for a few moments. Why is it silly? I felt no further anger toward the human. I felt tired and terribly alone. I missed Viarathi. I had missed her every minute we had been apart. And now that I was in this strange place, I knew I would never see her again. Never hold her again, never tell her that I loved her again. That truth was devastating. Because this is not the place for sleeping. He scrunched his face up to make his lips bigger, and the strange man looked even more like a monkey. The dead gods are not sleeping, nor are they dead. How do you know the business of the dead gods? I was thinking about Viarathi, and this man's ridiculous answers were bringing back my anger. The emotion was more comforting than my despair. How do you not know their business? He laughed again, and it was a burst of glee. The man danced around his cane like it was his partner. He continued this way for half a minute, before he realized that I was watching him. Then he stopped and stuck his tongue out at me again. I thought that was a funny reply, but you obviously don't agree, he said at last. You aren't giving me the answers to any of my questions. I choked back the scream and tried to focus on something other than this strange man until my anger cooled. I noticed that there was a brightly colored object in the distance. When I focused on the red, orange, and teal of it, I saw that it was a floating sea vessel with sails that resembled fish fins. In fact, the entire ship looked like a fish swimming away from me. There were elvens and humans on the deck, but they didn't seem to notice the two of us standing so many miles away. You should ask better questions. He noticed me looking at the ship, and he turned his head slightly. If you are interested in sleeping, then that is the route to travel, or you can stay here with me. Are they dead? More dead than us. His smile faded, and he bobbed his head like an owl again. I finally got a hold of my anger and pondered my next question for Antus. The man was not trying to attack me, but he had some strange agenda that prevented him from being direct. Can you help me? I asked. Oh, that depends. His smile grew bigger. What do you need help with? Earlier you said that my daughter was important. I paused to gauge the man's reaction. His scent still bothered me, but I did not want to speak to him about it yet. I did. His smile was gone now. What did you mean? He hesitated for a few moments and then pursed his weirdly shaped lips. She is a creation of Ewing Kair. Is that not a good enough reason? He smiled again and seemed delighted by his own response. It was not a good enough reason, but I had already learned enough of the man to know that he would only say something cryptic or ridiculous if I pressed for clarification. Exhaustion hit me suddenly, but it was only in my mind. This man was exasperating, but he was the only one here. He was my only hope for answers, even if he was not giving them to me at the moment. Will you help me save her? Of course. His smile grew larger. It will not be easy, though. Even now, your enemies plan to kill Kair before he can obtain an ovule. I am used to challenges. No, you are used to slight inconveniences. If you really want your daughter to live, the path will be the most difficult you have ever traveled, and we may not be successful. If you also want to save Kair, that will make it even more challenging. He bobbed his head and the smile grew larger. But it is not impossible. I am willing to do whatever it takes, even if it means she will never see you again. My chest fluttered, and my breath caught. Well, nothing is impossible. You can do anything you want.
You said earlier I could stay here with you. Is there a way we can save my daughter from here, or do I need to return to my world?
We will drift through the cosmos like ghosts of memories.
He nodded at his own words.
As such, there is only so much you can do to manipulate our creations. We do not want your enemies to know what you are attempting.
Our creations? He was confusing me again, and I felt my anger rising.
Oh, that was a slip of the tongue, my dear. Perhaps it is better to talk of what is happening than what could be.
Can you just fucking make sense for 5 minutes? I yelled.
Kyaer is looking for the Avial. Your executioners know of his intentions. They will attack him.
But I can't do anything about that while I am here with you. My lover was known to be invincible in combat, but I doubted even he could stand against all of his ex-generals.
There is little we can do. But even a little is better than nothing. Enough drops of rain can carve through the hardest of stone in time.
He held his hand out to me.
Do you wish to see what transpires next? It might be hard to watch, but perhaps it will inspire your actions.
Fine. I took a step toward the monkey man and grasped his left hand with mine. Then we were burning. But I felt no pain. It was not my body that was burning. It was the bones and flesh of the city that had been Shlara's rest. A strange green and purple liquid flame coated everything. The heat did not reach me. I had to squint my eyes to see more than 20 feet in any direction. The air smelled of fire and ash. How did we get here? What has happened to this place? I heard thousands of screams filling the city as humans tried to flee the flames or perish in them. Entas pointed across the cobblestone street to a massive structure being consumed by flames. That is Malik's estate. As I said the words, I saw a horrible armored figure sprint down the street. The fire danced off the screaming demon skulls of his armor. The asymmetrical helmet hardly swayed as the figure ran with impeccable form. There was a wall around Malek's home, and while it was mostly there for decoration, it still stood 20 feet high. The armored terror did not even slow its gait and leapt over the painted barricade with fluid ease. Kyaer! I moved toward the estate and screamed his name, but the figure was already gone, and I doubted he could even hear me over the sounds of the dying city. I made it 3 steps before I stopped on the scorched pathway. A large man with a shaved head sprinted down the road from the same direction as Kyaer. He had an ugly scar over his nose and held thick-bladed swords in his ham-sized fists. Next to him was a blonde woman only as tall as a man's shoulder. She held 2 shorter, curved swords, and what the man had in a lumbering bear stride, she equaled with a smooth gait, as graceful as Reliata. The pair's clothes were lightweight affairs that might have once been colored white, but were now stained red with blood and black with ash. Thayer and Alexia. Fear filled my stomach with panic. Entas and I stood out in the open space of the burnt street. I carried no weapon, and neither did the old human next to me. I could not stand against them.
Relax, Ayolorathi. They cannot see us.
Entas laid a hand upon my shoulder. The pair ran to the wall and leapt. Alexia's movement was graceful and liquid. The woman did not even touch the wall when she flipped over it. The muscular bald man had to anchor the pommels of his swords on the top of the rock and then use his legs to kick himself over.
That's good. They really didn't see us.
The old man breathed a sigh of relief, but the smirk on his face convinced me that he knew we were invisible. We were ghosts. While Thayer was climbing the wall, I saw 2 other men running toward the estate, Malik and Gravani. Their clothes were also ruined with blood. Entas approached the wall. I followed and watched as the 2 Abarni jumped over it. We stood 30 feet from Malek and Gorbani when they made the leap. Entas walked closer to the wall and then passed through the stone. I stared for a second because the wall actually seemed to part, bend, and warp out of the man's way. For a moment I could peer through the barricade to the gardens behind it.
Hurry! He called from the other side.
I reached my left hand out to the stone wall. It was as if the rock did not want to touch me, and it parted with a strange urgency. I waved my hand quickly through the stone, and it dipped and danced as if I was stirring oil in water. I stepped through the wall. I thought I would feel some sort of strange sensation, but other than the brief scent of dirt overpowering the taste of flames in my mouth, there was nothing. I was on the other side of the stone, facing the burning garden. Entus waited at the entrance to Moloch's estate. I ran through the smoking remains of a once beautiful garden and reached the door right behind the small human. We passed through the thick wooden portal just as we had through the stone wall.
The ovule is in the basement below us.
I looked at my feet and wondered if I could pass through the floor to reach the level below. The dark wood began to bend around my booted feet, and then I floated down to the basement like a feather. I was disoriented for a few moments, and I tried to recall where I believed the ovule was kept. I knew Moloch had a room devoted to the various artifacts he had discovered on their travels, but Kair and I had never made it that far into his estate. Moloch's soldiers had captured us as soon as we entered the home, and we never reached these lower levels. I heard a clang near me. I spun around to see Kair walk across the hallway ahead of me. He had removed his helmet, as the ceiling was too low to accommodate the long horns of the horrible thing. I almost cried out to him, but I knew he would not hear me. It was painful to see him, to see the anguish in his eyes. I wanted to assure him I was okay, I was still with him. I wanted to touch him again. Entus stood behind me. We turned the corner and walked down a short flight of stairs to the room that held Moloch's collection of artifacts. The walls were lined with suits of elven armor, weapons, books, artwork, and musical instruments. The sight of them pained me almost as much as the grief in Kair's eyes. I had failed all of them. My race was reduced to a few relics, to be remembered as nothing but a horrible scourge, driven from the world as vermin by the heroic O'Barney. History would remember us as monsters, as oppressors, as evil finally defeated. The beauty of what we had created, the world we had established and successfully maintained for our gods, would be forgotten. On the far wall, I saw the painting I had made of the floating islands. I froze, my vision drawn to the artwork until I could see nothing else. It was exactly like the place from which Entus and I had come. Except in this painting, Kair was carefully depicted on the canvas. My mind screamed back through my memories, and I tried to recall where I had left the piece. Had I given it to Reliara? No. I recalled talking to my suitors about the artwork one morning. We had made the wager about hunting carrion beasts. Then another thought drifted into my head and interrupted the quest to figure out where Moloch had found the artwork. It was clearly Kair in the painting. If Moloch had it, then he must have known that an elven painted his friend. A sharp thud ripped my attention from the painting and back to the father of my child. There was a chest on a simple dais in the center of the room, and Kair lifted the lid with armored fingers. Entus tugged on my arm, and we walked around the handsome man to see his face. Inside the chest was an ovule, and it pulsed and glowed with the life of a thousand lightning bugs. I wish she could see me. The words escaped my mouth before I even thought to speak them. His armor was horrific. Thousands of my people had seen it just before he ended them. Those few of us who survived his wrath would always remember it in terror. But the face behind the helmet was still that of the simple young man who had taken care of my horses those many years ago. Entus grunted at my comment, and I was both surprised and relieved that he did not utter another sentence of useless drivel. Thayer and Alexia entered the room. Their footsteps sounded clearly, even over the screams outside. I could smell their terror and their blood, but Kair was absorbed by the glowing orb. "Kair!" I yelled when Thayer advanced a few steps and quickly closed the distance. Kair looked up from the chest and our eyes made contact. His mouth opened in surprise. Then the point of Thayer's sword emerged from between his eyes. "No!" I screamed and felt my heart shatter with numbness. My nails raked across the ugly man's face, but his skin and bones seemed to part like water before my hands. I shrieked again, but the humans did not hear me. Thayer yanked back on his blade, and the sword made a sick, wet sound when it came free of Kair's skull. My lover's body fell to the stone floor, and blood flowed out like an undammed river. His eyes and mouth were still open with surprise. After a few seconds, his body began to twitch in scattered movements that reminded me less of the invincible warrior he had been, and more of a leaf caught in the wind. I tasted his blood in the air, and it mixed with the horrible scent of his brain matter and the smell of fresh death. No, no, no! I tried to touch his body, but my hands passed through as if he was made of smoke and fog. Do something! I knew I was screaming, but I could not control my voice. The old man made a wincing expression with his face and then shrugged his shoulders.
He can save himself if he wants to.
What the fuck does that mean? He's dead, you idiot!
Yet you just asked me to save him.
He laughed, and I realized that I never wanted to kill someone as much as this fucking asshole. Except for Kyair's generals, I wanted to rip them apart as well. The tears came down my cheeks, and I could do little more than weep. I kept attempting to touch his bloody face, but my hands just swirled his skin and bones around like a tortured oil painting. He's dead. I'm dead. No one can help Vyarathi. She is dead now.
What happened?
Malak said. I turned to look at the four humans.
He was touching that orb. It was like he didn't even hear us walk behind him.
Thayer let out a long sigh and then tossed his swords down on the stone tile at his feet. He sat down and put his face in his palms before sobs began to tumble out of his wide chest.
You did what you had to.
I killed my best friend,
Thayer moaned. He tried to kill us, Alexia said softly.
No, he just wanted to get the orb with his woman. We should have let him have it.
The big man tore his hands away from his tear-streaked face and leveled a finger up at Malak.
You did this. You should have just fucking let him go. Why didn't you just let him go?
He wiped the back of his massive forearm across his face.
Do you want to tell Shlara that we should have let him go? With the elven? Fuck you, there,
Malak spat.
I'm the one that has to deal with her every fucking day. Kyair just tried to kill all four of us. He almost did.
Shlara? I turned to Entus, but the little man just shrugged again.
And our city burns. How many thousands of our kin are dead by his hand?
Gravani choked out the words while he shook his head. We need to put out the fires. We can argue later about what we should have done with Kyair. Alexia looked down at my lover's body. Her blue eyes were moist with tears.
Then we should talk about what to do about Shlara.
She turned to look at Malak.
Fine.
His jaw clenched. He reeked of human terror.
I will take my brother's body. We should entomb him in the Gilar Mountains north of here.
Why there? Alexia asked.
The two of us once hid in a shallow cave within the range when we fled the elvens.
The big man retrieved his sword and then bent down to scoop up Kyair's body with his massive arms.
He isn't a hero, there. He betrayed us all for the elven woman. You fucking say that again and I'll cut you in half. You don't even believe those words. That is Shlara speaking through your coward mouth. You loved him more than any of us did. Fuck you.
The big man pushed his scarred nose up against Malak's handsome face and they stared at each other for a few moments. Then Alexia cleared her throat. There are lives we need to save. Focus on our next steps. We can argue later, the woman said.
Fine.
Both men said at once. Thayer left first, followed by Gorbani, then Alexia glanced to Malak before she walked from the bloody room. Malak sighed and sat on the floor. He mirrored Thayer's movements and put his face in his hands for a few moments. Then he exhaled again before standing.
What did they need this for?
He walked over to the dais and looked at the orb.
This might be your chance.
Entus whispered from his spot on the other side of Malak. What do you mean?
If he touches the ovule, he'll be exposed to enough energy to interact with us.
He wiggled his beard. Then I can kill him?
No.
He laughed.
Then you bite him.
Bite him.
Hard enough to taste his blood, but don't kill him.
I want to kill him.
Do you want your daughter to live?
I don't see how biting the human is going to get me my daughter back.
I could explain, but then the opportunity might pass. Just bite the man. Taste his blood, but don't kill him.
I don't trust you, I growled. He's going to touch the ovule. And Tess was correct. Malik had spent a few seconds studying the orb, but then he slowly reached his hand out to lay his bare fingers on the smooth metal surface. Do it! Entus screamed the command when Malik's fingers lay upon the orb. I reached out to grasp the human, and my fingers made contact. Malik gasped with surprise. I did not want to bite the man, but Entus's words were too compelling, and before I could second-guess them, my teeth were sinking into the sides of Malik's neck. Ah! He screamed and tried to reach back to grab me, but when his hands left the ovule, I tumbled through him like he was a waterfall. Fantastic! Entus yelled triumphantly. That will make everything easier. Why did I have to do that? My stomach churned with disgust. I doubted that the bitter, horrific taste of Malik's blood would ever leave my mouth. I'll explain in a few moments. Entus pointed at Malik. He raised his hand to the bloody wound on his neck and looked around, the scent of terror clear on his body. What the fuck was that? The human returned to his feet and spun around the room to look for the unseen attacker. Tisk, 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 Malik, you won't trust your intuition on this. You know what happened, don't you? Do you know this man? I asked. Of course, taught him everything he knows. Entus turned to me and winked. Of course, that isn't the same thing as everything I know, is it?
Why did I have to bite him?
I'll tell you soon. I just want to see if he is going to touch it again. Then I'll really scare the shit out of him.
Malik made as if to fulfill Entus's request, but the tall man pulled his hand back at the last second.
I'll leave this here for now,
he said aloud, and he glanced around the room to see if anyone heard him. Then Malik turned his back on the orb and ran out of the room.
Back to the islands. Take my hand.
Entus reached out toward me and grinned. I looked at his hand and then crossed my arms. Why did I have to bite him? Is there still a chance that my daughter can live?
That bite has much to do with your daughter living. I'll explain more at the islands.
He smirked and then rolled his big eyes in his skull.
Of course, if you want to stay here and roam this world as a ghost, I can just leave you here. But let me tell you, that shit gets old real quick. You will have plenty of time to ask me questions.
Very well. My heart was still in agony over Kair's death, but I had no choice but to trust this man who said he would help me. I grasped his hand. Then the islands and their peaceful existence filled my vision.
The blood is a type of magic.
Entus let go of my hand and walked away from me.
It creates a bond between people.
So I am bonded to Malik now? I walked behind the monkey.
Don't sound so disgusted. It's not like you fucked a man.
He laughed and he threw himself off the ledge of the island. Entus! I screamed and dove toward the edge of the endless drop. My hand reached out, but I was too slow and he was already falling. He landed a quarter of a mile beneath me. He should have broken into a thousand wet pieces. He rose and continued walking. Then he paused, looked up at me, and yelled,
Well, come on now. We've got shit to get done. If we are already between life and death, you aren't going to go either direction by falling here.
I can just fall down? I yelled.
Of course. Hurry.
Oh, fuck this asshole. I whispered aloud and closed my eyes. I had already trusted this strange man more than I ever thought I could trust anyone, save Rodiata and Nairathi and Kair. What was one more leap of faith? I jumped off the edge and aimed my body at the distant ground below. I fell, but the sensation was slow and as pleasant as sliding through a pool of water on a summer day. I traveled much slower than I imagined and landed softly next to Entus.
He's over here.
Who?
Kair, try to keep up. We are moving quickly here, single-born.
How is Kair here? How do you know I am a single-born?
There he is.
Entus pointed off into the distance. A figure jumped between the islands and spun through the air like one of the bright white birds.
Wait here. I'm going to try to get him to come see you. Then you can tell him Vyarathi's name, and this conundrum will be solved easily.
He winked at me and then jumped off into the air like there was no gravity holding him on the land. I wanted to run after Entus and fly through the air after him. I wanted to see Kair and speak with him. But I feared doing anything other than what the strange old human told me would probably not help me or Vyarathi. I saw him land next to Kair, and they began to converse.
They were perhaps 4 miles away, so I could not hear their words or taste Kyaer's scent in the air. I tried. I still remembered his scent so clearly, and I missed it almost as much as the feeling of his body inside of mine. It took all of my willpower and love for our daughter to keep me cautiously waiting here instead of leaping toward him. I saw Antas gesture back at me, and I raised my hand. Kyaer turned his eyes in my direction, and my heart leapt in my throat. If he was here, did that mean we could stay together forever? What about Vyarathi? I had too many questions to ask Antas, and my frustration was beginning to turn into anger again. Then Kyaer disappeared. It was a split-second change. Antas was speaking with my love, and then Kyaer was no longer standing there. I glanced around the islands, thinking that maybe he might have changed his position, as Entus did when I first met him, but I did not see my love anywhere.
Unfortunately, that went as I expected, Entus said from beside me. I was not surprised by his appearance.
What did he say?
He has memory problems, so do you, but I work with what I can.
Where is he?
Want to see?
The man held his hand out to me again. Yes. I touched him, and we were suddenly in a cave. The place smelled of torch sap, weapon oil, and death. Kyaer walked past us.
By the dead gods!
I felt joy fill my chest and tears sting my eyes. How is he alive?
Malak was a backup plan.
You are speaking nonsense again. I felt no anger. Kyaer seemed completely healthy, and we followed him out of the cave into a massive campsite of the Obarni army.
Blood forms a bond. We only have so much power in this world. We have more with those we are bonded with.
Antas looked at me, and then back to Kyaer.
I'm using simple terms with you because you are an idiot.
Fuck you! The joy left my stomach, and the anger came back in full force.
That would be dysfunctional. Do you want me to finish my explanation?
Fine, but if I could kill you, I would have by now.
I am helping, Singleborn.
He shrugged.
I should not have insulted you, but I grow frustrated as well. He was supposed to listen to me, but he didn't. He never does. You've always been the easy one.
What are you talking about? Damn it, Entas! I screamed and felt the tears begin to cascade down my cheeks. Why won't you just explain what is going on? You treat me like an idiot, but I am only confused because you refuse to speak plainly. I just want my daughter to live. I want her to know her father. I will do whatever you ask. Just help me.
The words burned as I spoke.
It was humiliating asking this old, feeble human for help, but I meant every word.
I want them to meet as well. You might not believe this, but I want that to happen more than you do. I've been waiting an eternity for her.
He did not smile.
I can only do what I do and pray to your gods for luck. You have more power than I. I will tell you what I can. I will explain what you can comprehend. If you do what I say, and we are more than lucky, we may succeed. Are you willing to follow my instructions, even if it means doing things that you may not understand?
Do I have a choice?
Yes, but no other alternative will bring her back from the radical.
I stared at the man for a few moments. There was no hint of his characteristic humor. I did not understand human facial expressions well enough to gauge if he was being sincere. He smelled like Kyaer, and he smelled like Vyarathi. And it seemed as if I had no other choice. I will do as you say.
Good.
He smiled again and bobbed his head.
Kyaer has forgotten that he needs the ovule. He forgot his daughter. He just wants to flee. We need to get him to the same world as Vyarathi, at the correct radical, with her name on his lips.
That sounds next to impossible. I shook my head.
Nothing is impossible, just more than a little difficult.
You were telling me about the blood and why I needed Malak?
Once you are bonded to someone, you can communicate with them in a subconscious state.
He scrunched up his mouth and looked thoughtful for a moment. Through his dreams?
Dreams are the easiest.
I am bonded with Kyaer. I had tasted his blood.
You are, but his mind is too strong. Malak is all we have.
and just walked out of the cave entrance and pointed below us. I followed his finger and saw Kyaer wearing a stolen uniform, riding a supply cart beside another human. What about my sister?
She is too far away from Kyaer and Malak.
But I can talk to her while she is sleeping?
Yes.
He looked at me and raised a gray eyebrow. The Obarni do not know how to operate the radicals. Malak is the most educated among them, and even he does not know about ovules.
Yes.
He somehow seemed to raise his eyebrow even higher. It looked ready to leap from his head. Will Kyaer continue to resurrect himself?
I hope so. He shrugged.
I looked out over the army. I could taste the smoke of hundreds of campfires and hear the Obarni working like bees in a hive. All the little insects striving together toward a common goal. They followed their queen without question. How is Shlara still alive? I finally asked.
You, of all people, should understand that.
I turned to look at the man, and for once I saw the flicker of fear in the eyes that were the same color as mine. I nodded at his confirmation, and felt my own terror threaten to seize my body. I exhaled, and then looked at the army again. I have a plan, I said to my new partner.
Chapter 43 The Obarni. They had all cursed me. Malak, Thayer, Alexia, Gorbani, Shlara. They trusted me to lead them against an impossible evil. In the end, I brought them to the cusp of victory, and then I betrayed them all. None of that mattered now. I floated with the islands. I danced with the white birds. I laughed like the water falling into the sky. And I forgot. I forgot the pain. I forgot my failures and my guilt. I forgot Kyaer and Shlara and Iola Rothi and everything else that ever mattered to me. I forgot my daughter. What is the moon but a reflection of the sun? Each day it hides and forgets the night that has passed. Why should I remember when all it brought me was pain? Hi. It was an old man, skin weathered by years, his face and stomach round and merry. Hello, I said back to him. Don't you have something to do? He tilted his head, and his mouth moved in the other direction. No, I replied. Are you sure you are not forgetting? Who are you? I asked him. He seemed familiar. I'm your friend. Do you remember? He asked. His face was kind, and I felt tears come to my eyes. I never said goodbye. My voice choked. The tears were streaming down my cheeks now. What you said while I lived means more than what you did not say while I died. I loved Shlara. I killed her, Entus. The woman screamed in my memories, and the white clouds around us darkened. He nodded his head. You have been trying to forgive yourself. Was there anything else you were trying to do? I don't want to do anything but be here with you. What about Iola Rothi? His words hammered into my chest, and I gasped. Is she here? I never said goodbye to her either. She is here. She wants to see you. But more than that, she wants you to meet your daughter. I had a daughter with Iola Rothi. I need to find our daughter. Yes, he sighed. You do not belong here any more. What about Iola Rothi? What about you? We will be okay. We are friends now. I find that hard to believe. I laughed and felt relief in the brief expression of joy. When was the last time I had laughed? It is true. Will you return? How do I return? I don't remember. You just have to decide that you no longer want to be here. He rocked his head up and down. I do want to be here. More than you want to find your daughter? No. Protect the ovule. She will be our savior. I tried to speak again, but the world began to fade. Night fell upon the islands. The birds quieted, the sky darkened, and the clouds and islands dissipated like evaporating mist. It was familiar. I realized I had been here before. This was not the first time, nor the second or third. I had been to this strange place thousands of times. Chapter 44. Kyair. The bright sunlight faded into darkness, and I blinked a few times to make sure that my eyes were actually opened. I looked around. Again, I found myself on a stone dais in almost complete darkness. This time, I was alone. I did not know how much time had passed, but I felt refreshed and ready as I rose. I had to find Nadia. Then the memories hit me like a tail whip from a dragon. They could not kill me. I remembered Thayer driving his sword into my chest. I remembered Malik taking my head off with his sword. Gorbani drove his lance through my chest. Then he cut me in two with his cavalry cleaver. Alexia killed me numerous times with her arrows and her blades. I would not stay dead. I heard their curses echo in my mind. I recalled the frustration in their eyes as they fought me. I was a sickness that never left them. I was a hell they could not escape. And I kept trying to get the ovule. I understood, finally, why they had to exile me. I felt the pain I had caused them, the desperation they must have felt. They were forced to send me here, in exile, to keep me from returning, to keep themselves safe, to keep the humans they had fought to free safe from me. Memories tumbled through my mind with tears too painful to shed. They did not know why I wanted the ovule, or even what it was or how it worked. Perhaps they feared I would use it to kill more of their people. They were not acting out of simple hate for me, but from fear and love. Love for the world they were building, the world I should have been building with them. "I am sorry, my friends," I said to the empty salute of the radical beds. I had been more than cruel to those who loved me. I had believed any life was worth sacrificing if it meant I could recover my daughter from the radical. I still believed it. I should have told my friends the truth. I should have confessed my love for Iola Rafi, told them of our child. They would have helped me. They would have understood. They would have forgiven me. The leather satchel lay at my feet. I did not remember how many months it had been since I left it there, but it seemed like lifetimes had passed. There were still many steps left to my journey, and the unknown variable of Nadia. Did she know my daughter's name? Would she even be willing to help me? I grabbed the satchel and felt comforted by the weight of the ovule inside. I slung the straps over my shoulders and then walked down the flights of stairs to the exit of the spire that made up one of the support columns of Castle Naya. I had forgotten about the worms before I used the radical, but they would not stop me from reaching Nadia or saving my daughter. My armor was gone, as were my familiar mace and shield. I had not even bothered to think of them when I first arrived here. I wondered if I could call them forth again. I would try later. Every moment I tarried here was one more my daughter waited, trapped in the stasis I had once endured. She had been stuck even longer than I had. My heart ached, and I felt my jaw clench and my eyes blink back tears. I did not know the girl's name, but I knew I loved her beyond anything I had ever loved before. I would not fail her. I would bring her here, hold her in my arms, and tell her how much I loved her until the day that I died. I neither heard nor smelled the putrid worms, though I felt little reassurance in this. The beasts were powerful and deadly enough to make prey of any man, woman, or creature I had ever encountered on this world or any other, save a dragon. I grabbed the ledge above me, and I flipped up to the higher platform. Then I jumped across to the bridge system and carefully sneaked to the main pillar with stairs winding around its circumference. I remembered that the stairs led to the dungeons above these vast caverns. As I climbed the stairs that clung precariously to the sides of the giant pillar, I began to consider where the creatures came from, why they were so horrid, and how they acquired sustenance. Perhaps I could return here some day and rid the place of their presence. I might need to do the same at Nadia's keep. I had killed the remaining lizard monsters on the switchback leading up to the eastern fortress, but that did not mean that there were not more hiding deep in the pits of the mountain. My heart burned at the thought of meeting my daughter. I wanted this more than I had ever wanted anything in my many lifetimes, more than I had wanted to eradicate the elvens. I wondered what she looked like, how old she would be, what she would think of me. Had Iola Rothi told her of me? Would she be as excited to meet me as I was to meet her, or would she be fearful, or worse, angry that I had not rescued her sooner, that I had not saved her mother, that I had destroyed the elven people, that I had betrayed the humans? She was both human and elven. Both races had reasons to despise me. If I had never met Iola Rothi, our daughter never would have existed. My life would have been so different. Such a simple choice on her part led to the creation of an entirely new world. A new life of freedom for millions, death for millions more. She had created everything by loving me. For it had always been her choice. I was a helpless slave against her limitless power. I led the war, but she set me in motion. Without her, I never would have felt a rage strong enough to drive me to lead a revolution. If there was an afterlife, as Jesme described, perhaps Leotol and Kai looked upon me and knew what I had done with the life they had been denied. Leotol would have been proud. He would have fit right into my army, becoming best friends with Malik, falling in love with Alexia's cool aloofness. He was strong and loyal. He would have been a great general. Our father was a steadfast, simple man, devoted to his work. He never spoke of freedom or yearned for change. He rose and worked every day as he was required, seemingly satisfied and accepting of his fate. Was that because he truly did not care, or because he did not want to give a hope to his sons that he knew they would never live to see? Yearning for something you can never have is more painful than accepting something you do not truly want. Did they deem my actions noble and applaud the freedom I had granted our people? Or did they think my crimes were as horrendous and unforgivable as I knew they were? It did not matter now. All that mattered was rescuing my daughter. At the top of the stairs sat the familiar gate that divided this ancient place from the younger dungeon. I had left the rusted iron portal closed. There had been no lock then, but now a shiny new padlock was firmly in place. The lock broke easily in my hand, and I cautiously unhinged the latch. I did my best to go through the gate without causing the rusted hinges to screech in protest. I was partially successful, and while there was a bit of a yelp from the metal, no one in the castle would hear it, unless they expected my arrival. Of course, it was possible that they were expecting my arrival. Talaxthi was cunning. I had not been able to surprise her, yet she had continued to surprise me. I believed Ternia had defeated the Empress, and was shocked when she revealed her plan to overtake the Obarni clan leader. It was as if she anticipated all the possible negative outcomes of any situation and planned for them accordingly. I had done the same as the general of my army. It was a wise course of action when facing an enemy intent on destroying you and your entire race. Talaxthi may have alerted her generals to the possibility that I would escape here, seeking Jesme and Nadia. They would be heavily guarded. The dungeons were a simple maze. Corridors formed a horizontal ladder of cells. At the end of each level, a set of spiraling stairs led up to the top floor of the dungeons. There, stairs led out to the castle courtyard. I was in the lowest level. The only light came from the distant glow of the radical beneath me. I doubted any human or elven could discern the soft violet light, but my eyes were strong and had adjusted to the near darkness enough that I could use the dim light to guide me. It grew ever more faint as I ascended, so I produced a tiny flame in the palm of my hand. While I walked, I listened for any signs of life on this floor or the ones above me. I heard nothing, not even the scurry of rats, and no torches were lit, nor had they been in some time. When I reached the highest floor of the dungeon, I expected to finally see torches blazing, perhaps even a prisoner or two, or at least hear rats and insects skittering over corpses away from my light and motion. But there was nothing here. The cells had all been meticulously cleaned. I caught no lingering scent of mold, blood, or feces. The door to the courtyard was closed. I stopped and listened. I did not know the time of day. When I had left the other radical, it was still lit with midday sun. How long did the journey take? There were sounds on the other side of the door. Horses, carriages, men and women conversing. I stretched my sense of hearing, but there was little to the conversations that I could use to assist me in my plan of entering the castle. These were simple servants and guards, chatting about nothing of importance. I waited for a lull in the conversation and then pushed open the door, emerging into the bright afternoon sun. I hoped this meant I had not been too long in the radical. The sun was only a little lower than it had been when I left. It took me a moment before I could lower my hand from my eyes and stare in wonderment. The castle shone in the sun like gold. Every surface was immaculate, reflecting the sun as a mirror. Hundreds of beautiful green banners hung from the ramparts and fluttered lazily in the warm breeze. I was overwhelmed by the scent of roses, fruit, and fresh earth from the garden. Dozens of servants and guards hustled through the courtyard on various errands. A few gave me a sidelong glance and then changed their path to give me a wider berth. It was almost laughable, as the courtyard was many hundreds of yards in width and much more in length. I was not close to any of them, but they were afraid. Something was wrong. My stomach flipped a few times, and I began to walk toward a side entrance. I was getting too many wary glances from the people, and my brain was starting to agree with my gut. This had happened before. Pog? A voice cut through my confusion and panic. The voice belonged to a young woman. She was dressed in the servant livery and carrying a basket of freshly baked bread. Her dark hair fell down past her shoulders in a chocolate wave. The woman was very pretty, and the plainness of her uniform did little to hide her beauty. "Pog?" the woman asked me again, and I realized that I recognized her from somewhere. I never forgot a name, but her face did not match the last memory I had of the girl. "Bethany?" She did resemble the girl who had helped guide me through the servants' quarters 6 months ago, but this woman could not possibly be the same person. She had aged years. "You remembered my name." She smiled gleefully, and her light brown eyes sparkled. My stomach dropped to my toes, and I felt a chill run down my spine. Are you injured? She looked at my chest, and I followed her eyes to look at my clothes. They were covered with crusted elven blood. No, but I could use your help again. My voice sounded strange in my own head. I realized I was trying not to let my timbre reflect the panic I felt. Of course, she grabbed my sweaty hand and led me through the doorway and into the entryway. The castle was busy, but once we were inside, I drew less attention. Everyone watched Bethany. We could not go 10 paces before a different servant greeted the pretty woman and made pleasant, almost deferential small talk with her. She had turned 8 new corners, and my brain fumbled to place us within the castle. Finally, she came to a door and opened it to reveal a tiny room. Inside was a cot with neat, sharply folded sheets, a small dresser with an oil lamp, and 3 dresses hanging from a rack. 2 were of the servants' colors, but the 3rd was a beautiful lavender dress with white flowers embroidered on the hem of the skirt. The garment was much finer than anything a normal servant would own or ever have occasion to wear. "Come in." "Your name isn't Pog, is it?" she asked, once she closed the door behind us. "Why do you think that?" I crossed my arms and tried to pick a question to ask her from the waterfall of those pouring from my brain. "When I saw you last, it was in that man Kyer's room. I served you and 2 elven warriors dinner. Do you remember?" "Yes," I nodded, and recalled Islata inviting Viernine over one evening for dinner. We'd eaten our usual feast, and then I had fucked the 2 elven women until the sun came up the next morning. "How long ago was that day? You seem older." She looked up to the right. "I guess it was about 3 years ago? Her words punched my throat as hard as Thayer would have. I gritted my teeth and let out the slowest breath I could manage without screaming. 3 years. It had been maybe an hour since I slipped through the radical, yet the girl who had helped me then was clearly older, and the castle had changed more than would be possible if years had not actually passed. "Can you help me?" I choked. "Are you Kyer?" She raised a pointed eyebrow. "Yes," I admitted. "There were a lot of rumors of you back then. They said you were quite dangerous." She looked thoughtful, though not afraid. "Yet I am standing alone, here in your room, and you haven't called the guards." I forced a gentle smile to my lips. I did not want to scare the young woman, but she wouldn't have brought me to this place if she did not intend to help me. "Yet," she stuck her tongue out, "I can get you new clothes again. I did that for you once before, do you remember?" "Yes." "Is your grandmother still healthy?" I recalled that the older woman had allowed Bethany to take me to the kitchen after she got me the clothes. "Yes, thank you for asking." Her smile grew, and I realized the question bonded the commitment of the pretty woman. "I will go get you new clothes right now. You should stay in here. Before you leave, is Duchess Nadia in the castle?" "Yes." Bethany's eyes sparkled, and her mouth formed a pleasant smile. "Rumor is that she will be leaving in a few days. Do you know where she is going?" My heart spun with both relief and worry. I was thankful that she was still in the castle, but the idea of her leaving the fortress worried me. "No, I'm just a simple servant girl, Kyer." She bowed, and a sharp blush filled her cheeks. "The Duchess asked the Queen to allow me my own room, though." She gestured to her small quarters with pride. "Once I helped save Chef Gorfried's life. One of the ancients tried to rip his eye out because some food was late, but I managed to deliver the order quickly enough to stop her." "He must be very grateful. You are speaking of Queen Jesme?" "Yes. I've only seen her a few times. She is quite beautiful. I should really get you clothes. We can talk when I get back." I nodded, and the young woman left me alone in her room. For the next few minutes, I paced around the small space and tried to control the thousands of questions flying through my mind. The most pressing question was obviously if Nadia had found the name of my daughter, but I also wanted to know how she and my other friends were doing, and the current political situation between the humans and elvens. What would Nadia and